151 years in the making. This is the First in Football Podcast, your look at Princeton Tigers football. Here's your host, Cody Kruschel.
This week on the First in Football Podcast, Cleveland Browns tight end Steven Carlson on a very unique second year in the NFL and some memorable moments from Princeton's undefeated Ivy League championship run in 2018.
The bonfire weekend, coming out off from the game, going 10-0, accomplishing everything we wanted to accomplish, just sitting around at the bonfire was really like a moment that kind of culminated our 4 years as a class.
We'll also be joined by junior running back Trey Gray and newly promoted offensive coordinator Mike Willis, who was part of Bob Sorace's first recruiting class at Princeton and has won Ivy League titles as both a player and a coach. This is the First in Football Podcast.
Baker's got the snap, back up in the middle of the pocket. He's in all kinds of trouble. He rolls right, throws back into the end zone. It's gone! Steven Carlson's got it! In the back corner of the end zone, what a catch! Touchdown!
Unbelievable
catch by Steven Carlson on a third and goal. And I mean a desperation by Mayfield, who was in all kinds of trouble, and he settled and rifled one in, and Carlson caught it over the defensive back. His first career catch for Steven Carlson.
That was Steven Carlson last year with his first NFL reception for the Cleveland Browns to seal a victory over the Pittsburgh Steelers. Steven, a 2019 Princeton graduate in his second season with the Browns. Steve, thanks for hopping on. That was a play we saw you make a few times at Princeton.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Cody. I think it's a catch I've been making for quite some time now, so it's no big deal to me, but sweet to happen on primetime TV and all my friends and family watching, so good experience. So
you're now two games into your second NFL season. Obviously, a lot about 2020 feels different than 2019 for everyone, but from a personal standpoint, how's this year been different? You know, you have a year under your belt. You're back in Cleveland. I know there's some turnover in the coaching staff, but still, you have that year of NFL experience under your belt.
Yeah, it definitely feels nice. You know, it's like one less thing to kind of worry about just on a day-to-day basis, being a rookie and not really knowing, you know, what's going on in the season, what the season holds. So it's like a nice little confidence boost to know exactly how the season's going to go, know what's expected of me, know what I need to do to do my job. And, yeah, obviously we got new coaching staff. Most of the coaches are new, but I've really enjoyed working with all these guys. And I think I've proven myself a little bit to them so far, so got to keep that up. Some new teammates here and there, but, you know, it feels relatively normal outside of all the COVID regulations and all that stuff, but feels good so far.
What was your offseason like? I know the offseason there was a lot of uncertainty about when you'd be able to get into the facilities to train and what the preseason schedule would look like. And, of course, there weren't preseason games this year. What was the biggest challenge with the offseason and sort of how did you stay ready?
Yeah, it was very challenging. I think kind of the biggest one was having to do everything on my own, like all the workouts, all the conditioning, you know. I obviously kind of motivate myself, you know, come from within, but it's tough doing all these conditioning workouts by myself at my middle school field with no one else to really like push me and no one else encouraging me. You know, I usually love to work out with John and Jesper and some of my old teammates. So it was sad not being able to do that. I was just in my garage where I grew up. I had a nice weight set there. So I got things done, but it was definitely different. I think just the biggest aspect was not having other people push me. You know, I was a little nervous about, am I getting the right amount of work in? Am I doing everything I need to do? But I think I did do what I needed to do, and it's showing now.
Yeah, you talked about John and Jesper, John Lovett and Jesper Horsted. There's not a lot of programs. You know, you can look at Power 5 conferences, and there's not a lot of programs that from a team have – their starting quarterback and two wide receivers in the NFL. And from that 2018 undefeated Ivy League championship team, obviously yourself, Jesper Horsted with the Bears, John Lovett with the Packers. I mean, heck, the backup quarterback on that team, Kevin Davidson, was in training camp with you guys. How much are you able to keep in touch? I know I saw you and John back at Princeton working out in the bubble a little over the offseason. And Last week when we had John on the podcast, he said that you guys are able to keep in touch with the text chain. But, you know, what's that interaction like, and how much do you guys push each other?
Yeah, it's awesome having two other guys pretty much in the same position as me. And I definitely FaceTime John multiple times a week. And I just, right before this call, I was playing video games with Jesper. So we're talking constantly, and it's nice just we play pretty much the same positions. You know, it's nice seeing how other teams are doing things, kind of comparing our schedules, but then also just talking about games, like recapping games, but also before going into it, talking about our specific jobs on special teams or whatnot, and how we're going to do certain techniques or how like John or Jesper thinks something works better than something I think does. So it's nice having like football minds, and we're all such good friends that, you know, we can really talk about some deep stuff without like feeling nervous about asking coaches or asking other players or anything like that. So I've enjoyed it. And yeah, we FaceTime multiple times a week, always playing video games. So it's nice to have people going through the same thing that I am.
What's the video game of choice with you and Jesper?
Jesper and I play Fortnite a lot, but Jesper's kind of stuck on the old Fortnite wave. Most of my friends play the Call of Duty Warzone now, so I play a lot of both of those games, but definitely on quite a bit.
I mean, you mentioned kind of having those deeper discussions, and you talked about having discussions about football, and, you know, going back to your time at Princeton, you know, you were listed as a wide receiver, but you sort of developed that tight end skill set as you developed in the program. And we've seen the versatility of John and the versatility of Jesper. And, you know, being at Princeton, playing in an offense that did some creative things, and then playing for, you know, guys like James Perry and Sean Gleason, you know, knowing those schemes and sort of playing in a unique offense, how much did that prepare you for what you're doing now in the NFL and being flexible?
Yeah, I think it prepared us a lot, straight up. Definitely, like, the way they forced us to know the ins and outs of the playbook, you know, that was one thing that as a freshman sophomore I definitely didn't have as good of a knowledge as I needed to, and they kind of pushed it upon me, like, you really can't play unless you know the playbook. And then coming up to the NFL, you know, I tried to be one of the first to really grasp the offense and learn the playbook, so I felt like I was a step ahead of some of my teammates when I was out there, just feeling more confident and more knowledgeable. And I think just kind of like the work ethic that our coaches and our team there had, you know, we enjoyed kind of like attacking the weight room and attacking practice. You know, it wasn't like a chore, and I think that's something that not everyone in the NFL has. Like, not everyone's as excited and as enthusiastic to go out there and make some plays and everything. And I think another thing that Princeton in general, you know, big forces you to manage your time really well. And I think that's definitely helped me. I don't know if I was the most efficient time manager at Princeton, but I got what I needed to get done. And I think that shows up here in the NFL too. Whatever needs to get done, I'm going to do it. I'm not going to do it 50%, or I'm not going to do it 70%, you know. I'm putting my whole into everything I do. And, you know, I think, yeah, all that stuff, discipline, coaches didn't really tolerate much, and they kind of instilled that in us. And I think just all those, like, intangible values that we as a whole team had, every player on the team had, I really just carry those with me. And it makes it a lot easier, honestly. I feel like a step ahead of a lot of people here in the league.
I mean, it seems like every step of your football career going back to your time at Princeton has been kind of methodical. You know, Princeton, 3 catches your first 2 seasons, playing behind some upperclassmen, playing on special teams, 1,600 yards, 16 touchdowns your junior and senior season when you get the chance. Last year, you go undrafted, sign, start on the practice squad, perform well, work your way onto the active roster. This year, you have a year under your belt. You're able to start the season on the active roster. I mean, how do you maintain that focus on just sort of the next step in the process for you? It seems like you've really been able to do that at every level.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really know what it is. I think maybe I don't really get discouraged about being a lower guy in the team, you know, when I came in to Princeton, I wasn't upset that I wasn't starting. It was just something like I knew I needed to improve. I knew I needed to get in the weight room, and I knew I needed to get extra work and know the playbook better. So it didn't discourage me that I was down. It just, like, made me put my head down and put in the work. And I knew if I went hard in the weight room and went hard doing all that stuff, you know, my time would come. And when my time came, I'd be able to perform, and I'd feel confident in all the work I put in. I'd feel confident that I'd be able to do what everyone was asking me. So I think that's kind of the same thing when I came into the NFL. You know, in training camp, I was hoping if I could just get signed to the practice squad, that's all I was saying. Like, if I could just get signed to the practice squad, I'd get my foot in the door. Like, I know I'll be fine because I know my work ethic and just how I go about things. I know I'll be able to push my way onto the active roster. So that was my mindset when I first came up and got in training camp. And, you know, you just got to stick your head down, do the work, can't complain, can't get discouraged. Just keep showing up every day, and good things will come from that.
We've talked about a lot of your Princeton teammates playing in the NFL around the league. You're far from the only Ivy League guy in Cleveland, J.C. Tretter. He's the center, Cornell graduate. He's the NFL Players Association president. Andrew Berry, your general manager, he played at Harvard. Your head coach, Kevin Stefanski, played at Penn. Do you guys ever talk Ivy League football? Does that ever come up?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a big topic now, just with the season canceled and being the first kind of league to cancel the season. Everyone's a little upset with that. But, it's a lot of, like, friendly banter here and there. Coach Stefanski loves to come at Princeton a little bit. It's really no surprise that, like, all these important roles are filled with Ivy League guys. And I think it's just shows everything that the Ivy League's about. You mentioned Coach Stefanski's been great this season. I've really enjoyed being around him. I think he really wants what's best for the team, wants what's best for the players. Andrew Berry's been awesome too, very smart, well-spoken, thoughtful guy. So, like I was saying, it's no surprise that these guys in high positions are from the Ivy League. I think that's just something we kind of expect being alumni.
2018, Princeton goes 10-0, the first undefeated season for the Tigers since 1964. Ivy League champions, the highest scoring offense in Ivy League history. You were obviously part of that team. Looking back at that 10-0 team, is there a game or a play or a moment that really stands out? Like, in your mind, what personifies that season?
Yeah, that was a tough question. Just looking at it before this, I honestly think the bonfire weekend, my senior year, just coming out off from the game, going 10-0, accomplishing everything we wanted to accomplish, just sitting around at the bonfire was really like a moment that kind of culminated our 4 years as a class. It was, you know, I think every class kind of says they're special, but like, I think we felt a little bit different about that. And I think the bonfire kind of proved to us that like all the hard work we had put in kind of paid off. And it was like, wow, like we were right. We had a special class. We did everything we wanted to do. And it wasn't necessarily worth it because of the bonfire, but it just like all the experiences we had, the bonfire was kind of like the culminating moment to look back and reflect on. How we wanted to do, we wanted to be a great class. We wanted to do so much, shoot for the stars, and we kind of accomplished that in our 4 years, which was awesome.
You talked about being back at home over the offseason, training at your old middle school field, Jamestown, New York's your hometown. Yeah. What's something people don't know about Jamestown?
Yeah, there's probably a lot. You know, it's a small town in Western New York. A lot of times when I mention it, not many people know where it is, but man, there's a lot of stuff. I think maybe some people already know Lucille Ball from the old TV show I Love Lucy. She was born in Jamestown and a strong female comedy figure back in the day. We had Roger Goodell was born in – I don't know if he was born in Jamestown or right around Jamestown, but he's from the area. Robert H. Jackson was a Supreme Court justice who, I think he was like the chief prosecutor during the Nuremberg trials, which was pretty cool. And just some little stories here. And I believe Jamestown was at one point like the first or second biggest furniture manufacturer in all of the United States. And playing along with that, I think we have like one of the highest proportion of Swedish people in all of the United States. And like Swedish people, I guess, are I'm half Swedish, but I'm not too knowledgeable of Swedish history, but I believe they're really into furniture and great at that. So those are just like some little things, just asking like my brother and my mom and some of my friends of their stories. Those are some things that stand out, I think. I could probably talk all week about Jamestown, but that's enough right now.
I was going to say, if you ever get tired of playing football, the Jamestown, Greater Jamestown Chamber of Commerce, I don't even know if that's a thing, but they probably have a spot for you. Steven, great catching up with you. I know it's a busy week. Hope to see you soon, and best of luck this weekend for the Browns against Washington.
Yep. Thanks for having me, Cody, and I'd love to come on here anytime. Anytime you guys need me, I'd love to catch up. So it was awesome. Thanks for having me on, and hope for the best with you guys and everyone there at Princeton.
Looking to buy or sell a home? Choose the Greater Princeton area's real estate market leader, Callaway Henderson Sotheby's International Realty. Our expertise is local, our reach is global, and our remarkable agents produce unrivaled results. Stop by our offices in Princeton, Pennington, Montgomery, and Lambertville, or visit CallawayHenderson.com to search for homes, find an agent, and love where you live.
Trey Gray, a junior running back out of Wren High School in Greenville, South Carolina. 5 yards per carry over his 2-year Princeton career so far. Trey, early on in the semester, first off, thanks for joining us. Where have you set up shop for the semester?
Thanks for having me. I am setting up in Greenville, South Carolina, back home with the family and taking care and watching my little brother grow up, because nothing's like the present, and I can just take the opportunity to see him.
I was going to ask if you're kind of getting sick of being at home and you want some of your own space, or if it's been sort of nice to be back around your family at a time where, you know, you maybe thought you wouldn't be able to.
Well, it's definitely nice because, like as I said, my little brother, I wasn't expecting just to be able to catch this much of his early childhood just because I would be at school so much. But I kind of miss having my own space in a sense. You get used to being on your own and having to do your own schedule, make sure you get this and that done. It's a good and bad being at home. But, I mean, I was grateful for the time to see my family.
How are you handling virtual classes? I know you had some practice at it in March once everything sort of shifted virtual and you moved off campus. And I know some people like it. Some people would rather be there in person. How do you feel about it?
Virtual school for me is just kind of like, it's really, you just got to get it done. It's not too bad. I mean, of course, teachers, it seems like they give you more busy work just to kind of fill your time while you're at home. But it's really not that bad. I just set up a schedule each day, kind of implement like I would at school, taking my classes, making sure I go to lecture, making sure I watch the pre-recordings, set up a time to do homework, have a space to go to that makes me feel more productive, get outside the house, and just kind of treat it like college, but at home, at home version, in a sense.
Let's talk about on the field. I know you don't have a formal season this fall. Hoping you guys get back out there and we get to watch you play soon. You know, you're not on campus. You're not with the strength and conditioning staff. You're not with your coaches in person. How have you stayed ready? What have you been doing to make sure that you're staying in football shape?
So at home for me, I work out with two trainers, and then I also get input from the coaching or the strength staff. So I do a lot of strength and conditioning, and then I have a person that has been helping me run more so I can like stay healthy, stay in condition, and like kind of keep my body moving in that sense, just to be prepared and be ready for when the occasion does rise.
I think we saw sort of early on what you could do. Your second career game home opener your freshman year 2 years ago, a 41-yard run in that win against Monmouth. You've had some guys you've been behind. You know, you had Charlie Volker, an all-conference running back. Colin Eady, an all-conference running back. Ryan Quigley, someone who's done a really good job in his role. You know, we've seen in this Princeton football program, you know, guys who maybe aren't starters as underclassmen, when they get their opportunity, they've been able to take advantage. Guys like Steven Carlson, Kevin Davidson, the list goes on and on. I mean, how do you keep that mindset knowing, you know, I'm here, I'm not the featured back right now, but I'm still young, and, you know, knowing that if you do the right things, you're going to get your opportunity?
Well, like, for me, as my dad has always told me, it's all about time and opportunity, and then just trusting the process and staying faithful. Because if it's going to happen, it will happen, as long as you're staying prepared, you're working hard, you're doing what you need to do, staying out of trouble. As long as you're doing the steps to be prepared for that situation, when that situation does arise, you'll flourish and it'll be all worth it in the end.
Going back to your time in high school, kind of a unique way to announce your verbal commitment to Princeton. You took the mic at halftime of a basketball game. Whose idea was that?
So that idea came from my coaches, my head coach, and my parents. With my senior year, I tore my ACL halfway through the season. And so originally it wasn't planned, like, to make such a big deal of, like, my commitment. But, like, since the community was there for me so much in the time of, like, where I really needed it the most, it was kind of a way just to, like, kind of let the community know that, like, everything was going to be fine. And I appreciate, like, all their help and support through that, like, rough time.
I know you had offers from just about every Ivy League school. What made Princeton the right fit?
So for me, I had narrowed things down to two schools, and I was really just looking at my life after and the team that was there now, or potentially, or the team that had the most potential. And, like, what struck to me about Princeton was there was good football and there was also a good school. It had the opportunity. You could do a lot. If I went to my other school, choices were kind of limited in what I could do after school, and it just wasn't the same quality as Princeton was.
You're a sociology major, and I know you were talking before we popped on, your most interesting class, not necessarily a class from your concentration.
So I would have to say my most interesting class, highly recommend it if you're willing to, or if you're into this kind of thing, but it was Viz 213 Digital Photography. I thought it was like a great breakaway from just the constant stress course load of SOC and then just taking prerequisites to fail your undergrad. And it was just like a new avenue of creativity and like expression. And I felt like you could use this skill just not in school, but like outside of your normal life.
Not just pointing your iPhone at something?
Basically, it takes it to another step, and you could really like do something with it if you really want to. If like you really saw that applicable, you could start your own little business or a side hobby, like taking pictures for events for people. Or you can just spruce up the family photo, don't have to go to a professional, and send them out on holiday cards.
There you go. Trey, final question. What's something people don't know about you?
That's a tough one. I'm going to have to say, well, my friends, they know I have a sneaker collection, but a lot of people don't know that I can juggle. So I can juggle, like, I guess regular juggling balls. I can do rings. And my best one has been bowling pins. So I guess that's a little side skill that I have.
Have to have you show that off once you're back on campus. Trey, great catching up with you. Hope the semester is going well, and looking forward to seeing you out there.
Thank you. Can't wait to be back out there with the boys and the coaches.
From the Jersey Shore to the banks of the Hudson to the suburbs of the Garden State to the streets of New Jersey's greatest cities, join RWJ Barnabas Health and the New Jersey Devils for the virtual 2020 Running with the Devils 5K and Walk, honoring our healthcare heroes. For the avid runner or the treadmill participant, together we're all running with the Devils. October 1st through the 25th to benefit the RWJ Barnabas Emergency Relief Fund. Wherever your feet take you, help ensure your local hospital resources to support its most critical patients today and tomorrow. Visit rwjbh.org/runningwiththedevils to register, and let's get healthy together while being apart. Mike, you had this past Saturday off, a rare Saturday off in the fall for a college football coach. I know that's certainly not where you want it to be, but yeah, talking before we came on the air, you had a chance to visit some family and watch some college football, and also an opportunity for a little bit of professional development.
Yeah, what was fun is we're trying to work with our guys to see the opportunities with all of these adverse circumstances. And obviously, it would have been very exciting to be out there at a game, in the flow of a game week with our team and with our players. But I've resolved to both professionally and personally use this time as best I can. And personally, it allowed me to spend the Saturday with my dad and my mom and my wife, which I haven't gotten to do on a fall Saturday in a pretty long time. And it also allowed me to watch some college football and get a chance to, you know, really be impressed by some of the offenses out there, in particular by everyone in my family but me. My mom, my dad, and my brother went to Notre Dame, and I got to turn on the Notre Dame game, and the job Tommy Rees and that coaching staff, Coach Kelly and that coaching staff are doing with the way they use tight ends in particular, 12 and 13 and 14 personnel, was so impressive. And I'm trying to see how other people utilize that position and work offense in general. It's been fun for me. So I had as good a day as I could, and I really enjoyed it.
You are now the assistant head coach. You're coming into your first year as the offensive coordinator. You're still the tight ends coach. You played here. You came back as an intern, then a position coach. Now you're the offensive coordinator. A lot of dominoes have had to fall to get you to the point where you are. And I have to imagine there aren't a ton of people who have had their hands in as many different aspects of this program as you have recently.
Yeah, I mean, I was in Coach Sarace's very first recruiting class, and I still vividly remember the home visit after he got hired with himself, and Coach Perry were there with my parents. And my parents had done a great job of keeping their, you know, thoughts out of the recruiting process, in the sense that they were really trying to let it be my decision, which is how it should always be. But when Coach Sarace left my house after, you know, like a two-hour meeting and dinner and Q&A, despite the fact that Princeton, you know, was not a program on the rise, that was why Coach Sarace had the opportunity to coach there. Over the past couple of years, my mom and my dad were so impressed by him that they were like, well, I know where I'd be going to school. And I think from a very early age, I was kind of captivated by his vision for this program, to be a part of the original college football program in the country. I got to play 4 years here and go from worst to first, you know, as a player and as a member of those teams. And then back as an intern, you know, doing a lot of off the field work, film analysis, analytical stuff, moving, you know, stuff out at practice, working on an alumni database for Coach Race that he was able to use in recruiting, and also to deploy our guys all over the country to connect them to people. Then was fortunate to get the bump to tight ends coach and to get to work with James Perry in my first year, who had been my college coordinator. And I've been really fortunate as I've, you know, worked my way up here to work with a lot of really exceptional people and continue to do so every day. And while the institution really is incredible, I tell people all the time, it's the best student-athlete experience in the United States. What has made my experience so special and why I'm so energized by the job I have now is the people here. Players, coaches, team around the team are really exceptional.
Talked about that worst to first. You were a member of the class of 2014, so part of the Ivy League championship team in 2013. And you know, that was a time period and a group and a team that really set a lot of the foundation for today's success. You mentioned you've been with Bob Sarace since the beginning of his time back at Princeton. Give us the sort of high-level walkthrough of the evolution of this program, because you mentioned it, worst to first, 1-9 as a freshman, 1-9 as a sophomore, and that synced up with Bob Sarace's first two seasons. And then by the time you're 4 years in, your senior season, you guys are clinching a share of the Ivy League title, and obviously a few more since then. That sort of laid the foundation for the success you guys continue to have.
Yeah, I think I'll talk about it from a culture perspective and all the things that go into the program, and also the offense itself, which Coach Sarace and Coach Perry and my position coach in college, Coach Morrissey, Coach Dennis Goldman, one of my mentors, the wide receiver coach, and all the other guys who are currently on that staff had a big role in. I think anytime there's a new staff coming into a place that for whatever reason has not had as much success as it like, everyone likes to talk about changing the culture. That's something you can find in any newspaper article about any new program at any level of football. We have to change the culture. But what struck me from an early age was the really robust plan Coach Race, Coach Perry had to, Coach Morrissey, to change this place through hard work, discipline, and through a really awesome offensive system of football. That fast and physical attitude that still lives here at Princeton, that permeates everything you do. The way you run, the way you lift, the way you study, the way practice is run, and then obviously, ideally, in your performance on game day. It was really fun to, while there were certain moments that weren't fun, you know, I joke to recruits that I don't wish you to go 2-18 in anything, you know, whether it's Madden or Call of Duty that they're playing now. But through those lessons, through that adversity, we learned what it meant to work hard and to buy into a long-term journey. And I remember particularly during my sophomore year, which was the second 1-9, in my junior year, the 5-5, where expectations were really low externally, but internally expectations had gotten really high. There was this collective sense that we really were on the precipice of turning the corner. And that's what made the 2013 season so satisfying, particularly as a senior, was you got to watch all of these lessons that you had learned, this system, this culture, this fast and physical culture that Coach Trace had created, make its way onto the field, and the competitive joy all my teammates and everybody played with. It was really awesome to be a part of. And I don't think it's a coincidence that season fueled, you know, a lifelong interest in football for me, because I witnessed the transformative power of coaching and culture that you can have on someone's life.
What do you remember? Let's go back to that 2013 season. What do you remember about the final day of the regular season? Not to rehash some maybe repressed memories. You guys run off 3 straight wins. By week 9, you clinch at least a share of the Ivy League title. Final day of the regular season, 2013. You guys spot Dartmouth a 21-0 lead. You come back to tie it in the third, eventually fall short, lose 28-24. Did that dampen the Ivy League title at all? Or, I mean, how long did it take you guys to go from, man, we could have won, we could have had an outright title, to we accomplished something pretty remarkable, and we've turned this program around. Like, how long did it take to go from what I imagine was some disappointment on the field and in the locker room at Hanover to realizing, hey, we've gone from 2-18 over 2 years to Ivy League champions, and we've really made our mark?
Yeah, the loss was certainly gut-wrenching. I won't sugarcoat that. That was not a fun day. A lot of credit to that Dartmouth football team and the way they challenged us. And it did not go our way on that particular Saturday. And that resulted in a lot of disappointment. I think you hit the nail on the head that locker room was a somber and even upset locker room in the immediate aftermath of the game. But one thing about playing on the road at Dartmouth is you have a 7-hour bus ride, you know, and that's how long it was because it was snowing, to reckon with everything that happened, and particularly when it was your last game, your entire season. I think as we all sat there, particularly, you know, a vivid memory for me is the senior group all kind of initially commiserating at the back of the bus. And then by hour 3 and hour 4, you know, as we're swapping stories and going through the process, we did realize, you know, how nice it was now to be a part of a program where you could view the first championship that had been won in quite some time as a disappointment and have regret about a championship season where we broke the all-time total yardage record in the league and had a quarterback score 43 touchdowns with only, I think, 6 or 7 starts under his belt. It was, to bring it full circle, it was a tough day and a tough immediate aftermath, but I was struck by, you know, Coach Terrace's demeanor. I thought he approached it really well. Coach Perry, Coach Morrissey all did the same thing. And then by the next day when he got to the banquet, it felt like we had something to be proud of. We had laid the foundation for future successes. And we had also given those next teams something to reach for, because you're right, that a shared championship is awesome. It is not quite as good as an outright championship, but it still, on the whole, was a season, especially looking back, we're able to be proud of.
You're heading into your first season as the offensive coordinator, whenever that may finally happen. The last 3 guys in that position have been pretty successful. You mentioned James Perry, who was your offensive coordinator. His last couple of seasons, some record-breaking offenses at Princeton. He's had 2 head coaching jobs since then. He's now at Brown. Sean Gleason jumps from Princeton to Oklahoma State, now joining Greg Schiano at Rutgers. Andy Orick, someone that you've worked closely with the past couple of seasons and as a player now at Rutgers as well. You know, 3 guys who had a lot of success but seemed to go about it a little bit differently, different personalities. What's something you've learned from each of them?
Yeah, so the overarching thing I learned from all of them was to be authentic and to play to your strengths while relying on others to help get you better and, you know, not cover up your weaknesses, but within a team, form a cohesive coaching staff that allows the offense to be as awesome as it can possibly be. Coach Perry is by far the most creative football coach I've ever been around. I've been around, including Coach Trace to this day, a lot of unbelievably creative football coaches. But his vision for what offense can be, his willingness to take competitive risks that he can understand as sound, but that present incredible challenges to the defense, whether it be his multi-quarterback system that he certainly put a lot of energy into and had a lot of success with, his willingness to use really unique trick plays, but also his understanding that those were all pieces of the puzzle in a really sound offense, and then his uncanny ability to call a game on game day was really, really impressive to me. Moving to Coach Gleason, his organization, attention to detail, and understanding of the exact job and technique of all 11 pieces on the field, from quarterback, the position he coached, all the way out, spreading out to the receivers, was incredible. And I learned a lot about how to develop a cohesive game plan, how to make sure that all 11 players, and then equally importantly, maybe more importantly, all of the position coaches are on the exact same page and have buy into the system. And his creativity as well, another excellent play caller on game day who had a tremendous amount of success. I took a lot from him. And then Coach Orrick, Andy and I think had a great relationship because we both played offensive line here. He's older than me. And other than Coach Cerase, who coached offensive line, for about a decade in the NFL, I learned most of what I know about offensive line play from Coach Cerase, Coach Morrissey, my college position coach, and then Coach Orrick, who I had a chance to be around as the offensive line coach and offensive coordinator for a long time. So I thought he was really, really, really unique in the way he unleashed our run game, the way he utilized protections to allow us to take vertical shots, and even his ability to grow as a play caller. I thought he threw the ball and chose to throw the ball as aggressively downfield as anybody. And that's a compliment to all of them because we've done a great job of that over the years. So, I feel very privileged to have worked with all three of them. And I hope that I can take the best things that they all did and also, just like they did when they all got the job, continue to move the offense forward and take it to new heights.
Before you decided to come back to Princeton and get into coaching, you were on a little bit of a different career path. I saw you post earlier this week on Twitter. Your first, I guess we'll call it your first real job out of college was, you said, essentially as a paralegal. Your boss was another Princeton football alum, Rob Friedman, who's a class of 1990 graduate. Talk about that connection and sort of the career path that you thought initially you might have wanted to go on. And then, this Princeton football alumni network, because obviously you go to a Princeton or an Ivy League school, there's this vast alumni network. I feel like being part of a football program in an athletic department like Princeton, those connections run a little bit deeper.
I think you hit the nail on the head. You also hit the attached something else that's really important to me about my job, is that I believe, along with Coach Cerase and Coach Burbitt, who've been doing it since I was a player, that our coaching staff's involvement, along with our outstanding Center for Career Development, Kathleen Mannheimer, is second to none in the job placement and networking process that allows our kids to reach new heights off the field as well. And my experience in college was indicative of that. I had a few other smaller internships on Wall Street, but my major internship going into my senior year was in the NFL league office with a guy named Hans Schroeder, who is now extremely high up at the NFL and already was there in the business development media strategy group, also now running NFL media. He was a class of 96 alum here, someone who I got to know tremendously through that summer, who mentored me, who made me excited about the business of sports and the way he was able to stay involved in the game off the field. And that spurred me to believe that that might be the world I wanted to be in. And the angle that I took away from the summer, though Hans is not a lawyer, was that a law degree might be a fun way for me to come at that. And it also struck me that most of the people who were commissioners, athletic directors at many places, I shouldn't say most, many had a law degree. So that brought me to trying to find a good place to paralegal at. I actually had an offer to be a paralegal at a different firm. And I contacted all the other people who I had met and networked with. My dream job had been at this firm, Proskauer Rose in New York City, to work with Rob. And I called him and I thanked him for networking with me. And I said, if anything were to open up there, that would be unbelievable. But I meant that more as a next step thing, maybe after I go to law school or something like that. And he said, actually, we just had an opening, one of these entry level project assistant paralegal jobs. Give me a few minutes. So this is, I think, a Wednesday or Thursday, and I have until Monday to accept this other job. He gets me in for an interview. I have to graciously explain to these people that, I understand if they can't meet this timeline, I have this other job. And then as I'm riding the subway back from the interview, I exit the subway with a voicemail and a job offer from this firm. And what I tell the guys all the time, and I hope my story was indicative of it, is you still have to do the work. You have to have a good GPA. You have to prepare for your interview. You ultimately have to be great at your job, right? But the network, the Princeton Football Association's ability to prepare our guys for the 40, as Coach Trace calls it, life after football, I felt that in my own life. It allowed me to experience all these different things when I was an undergrad. And then while I was a project assistant at Proskauer Rose, I realized that, you know, I really missed football tremendously. I wanted to teach and coach. I wanted to be a mentor for other people. And I thought football was the best vehicle for me to do that because those have been the most impactful people in my life. So Rob Freeman, who was my boss at Proskauer Rose, is one of the most successful sports attorneys in the United States. He actually gave me the nudge. I told him, I asked if I could meet with him. I told him he encouraged me to pursue it. Coach Sir Ace and others in the Princeton Football Network, including Coach Jason Garrett of the New York Giants, were candid in giving me advice and trying to put me in touch with other people. And then right before the season, a defensive intern, you know, quality control position opened up on the Princeton football staff. And that was an incredible opportunity for me. And I've tried to add value here since.
You're a position coach, you're an offensive coordinator. Obviously, this is kind of a strange year for everybody, especially college football coaches, college students, college student athletes. What have you been doing? How have you been checking in with your guys since you don't have the structure of a season and you can't really see them in person?
Yeah, so I think to my earlier point about finding the silver lining in all this and seeing opportunity within adversity, trying to stay together in times of adversity, I think we've done a great job, and I would really credit the Coach Cerace and the other position coaches on offense, you know, Brian Flynn, Mark Rosenbaum, Chris Sarkowski, Brandon Cuevas. These guys are unbelievable position coaches, experts on offense. They make my job fun every day. And the way those guys, and I've tried to emulate them in many ways, have helped sustain a leadership model to, within the rules, be in contact with our guys, checking in on their academics, setting up, you know, Zoom meetings to help build culture, you know, and all those other things. And then within the rules, finding ways to funnel strength and conditioning information, football information to them through all of the medias we use, you know, whether it be apps or Zoom meetings or the like, and then leaning in with the guys about the things that they can control. So they'd obviously like to be playing. They would obviously like to be practicing or together. But one major consequence of this is that they have an uninterrupted lifting block that never really exists in any other time in college football. The longest they usually go with uninterrupted powerlifting is probably about 2 months. And they have an incredibly long block here to get better at that. And so I've leaned on Jason Glucci, our director of sports performance, and his staff to help move our guys along. And I viewed it as my job to build culture, to build the knowledge when it can't be practical, and to get the guys excited about when we return. Because ultimately the program that has worked not just the hardest, but also intentionally and the smartest, the program that stays together, is going to be the one that's ready whenever we return. I'm just so proud of the effort of our other position coaches on offense, and our players. And they make my job energizing every day. Even from home, I love being around them digitally.
You mentioned the two new assistant coaches on the offensive side of the football, Chris Sarkowski, the offensive line coach, Brandon Cuevas coming in to coach the running backs. Why are you excited about those two guys?
So they are dynamic. And first off, they are masters of their craft. They're people who really do grasp how to coach their positions. Chris Sarkowski was someone who I met early on in my coaching career. We were both tight ends coaches working the Lawrence First and Goal Camp, which is this awesome charity football camp to raise money for a pediatric cancer in Pennsylvania. And we hit it off. We stayed in touch lightly, exchanged notes on a few different things. We, oddly enough, despite both being from Northern New Jersey, both married girls from Maine and got married at the exact same wedding venue, like 45 days apart in the same year. He texted me out of the blue like a week after I got married, and was like, "Hey, did you get married at Foster's Clam Bake in Maine?" And I said, "Yeah, why?" And he's like, "I'm getting married there in a month." And when this job opened up, I immediately developed a list of candidates for offensive line, and it became evident to me that he was going to be the guy at the top of the list. And it made me feel even better when I brought my list to Coach Cerace, and he opened up his list, and at the top of both was Chris Sarkowski. You know, that was really impressive. And that, as Coach Trace had mentioned, that came from his connection to Paul Alexander and Paul's regard for Chris after having clinic with him. He's also a really good guy, a diligent recruiter, a great team player on our staff and with his guys. And I've been impressed with the camaraderie he's been able to build despite a very short amount of time in person. I don't know if I've ever been around a coach who so clearly galvanizes his position the way Chris does. And it's been really, really, really fun to be around. Jumping to Brandon, he's another New Jersey guy. These jobs almost always come, I shouldn't say almost always, often come from some other relationship you have. And in Brandon's case, he had been college teammates and roommates with Mark Rosenbaum, our quarterback's coach. He came highly recommended by Mike Weick, who had been on a coaching staff when he was a player. And then the more I got to know him, his acumen as a former offensive lineman and understanding the run game, combined with his expertise in having coached the running backs, and not just coached running backs, but coached them well, coached all league players in every single season he coached running backs. He jumped out to me as a guy whose expertise, energy, and enthusiasm was going to lift our staff to new heights. And where both of these guys have made an impact already very quickly is in recruiting. They're dynamic recruiters. They do an incredible job. They have really good energy, enthusiasm. And again, Brandon does just as good a job as Chris of galvanizing his position group. And then the final thing I'd add, which is true of both of them, is it's exciting for me to get new perspectives. You know, I'm always trying to work, amplify my strengths and work out my weaknesses. And I feel like I understand the system really well and I'm able to integrate new ideas into it very well, but I've also only worked at one place. So there's obviously a lot of independent studying that I do, clinicking with other coaches, but one of the easiest ways to get those perspectives is to bring them in-house. Chris is an expert in multiple offensive systems, same with Brandon. Mark Rosenbaum has worked at a lot of places, and Brian Flynn is an incredible wide receivers coach and pass game guy who also has worked at a lot of places. And having all of those ideas in the room with a system that I think is pretty rock solid, but being able to tweak it to our players, and in addition to working with four great guys, that makes my job awesome. And that's one of the many reasons I enjoy coming to work.
We had Carson Bobo on the podcast last week. He's a junior tight end, and he's coming off a breakout season last year as a sophomore. He was a second-team All-Ivy League selection. Really that perfect complement to Graham Adamidas, who was one of the veterans and what was a relatively young offensive unit last fall. You've been around Carson since he's been here as a freshman. What allowed him to take such a big step forward last year?
So I think the first thing that Carson has that is, I think, the hardest thing to find in players, and I feel like most people are probably expecting me to say talent. It's not talent. It's drive. It's energy. He is a relentless learner, a incredible competitor in the weight room and on the field, and his ability to manage his time as an engineer, which I consider to be the most difficult course of study on campus, combined with his evolution as a player, it was evident to me from early football, fall practices as a freshman to especially spring football, our favorite developmental time, where he took a really big leap, an atypical leap in his freshman spring. It was evident to me that he had a skill set, not just as a pass catcher, where I think it's evident when you watch him play that he is highly skilled, but where he made enormous strides was as a blocker. And that comes from both attention to technique, weight room development, but also from want to. His competitive nature on the field really stands out to me. All of those things make him a joy to coach. And Carson represents, I think, while he's in the tight end room, and guys like Steve Carlson and Jesper were guys who have played outside and then maybe had, especially in Steve's case, very tight end-like roles and tight end-like jobs as they got older. Carson is another emblem of Coach Race's emphasis on positionless football. He's a guy who can play outside receiver on either side. He can play in the slot. He can be an inline or a wing tight end or be in the backfield. And we strive to recruit guys like that. And there are lots of other guys in the room who are eager to get their chance, having played behind Graham and Sam and Carson. And I can't wait to watch those guys develop as well.
Led me into my next question. Bob and I talked last week about that, theory positionless football. And he sort of compared it to what's going on in the NBA where you're moving around in the court. Steven Carlson, John Lovett, Jesper Horsted, they're in the NFL. They're listed as tight ends. They may not have necessarily lined up at that spot here at Princeton, but they had that skill set. How has that sort of theory of positionless football developed, especially here at Princeton, and how has that changed what you're doing from a recruiting standpoint?
So first off, within our offense, the offense is structured in such a way that allows guys to move around to different positions within the structure of the play really easily if they're willing to study, and they're willing to understand the jobs of all 11 guys, to learn concepts rather than just a very small sliver of the play. That's the structure that I think first empowers people. Then, when you think of the overarching philosophy of our offense, other than being fast and physical, the other thing we talk about is having a player book, not a playbook. Don't get me wrong, I have core concepts that I really believe in, but we're going to adapt what we do every year to the strengths of the guys on our team. And I think where that ties into positionless football is the hardest people to find, but the people who make it very easy to change between formations, play philosophies, and play families that stress out defensive coordinators and defenses, both from scheme and personnel standpoint, are what I refer to as big skill athletes. Sometimes those are big outside receivers. Sometimes they are running quarterbacks who also play a lot of H-back, like John Lovett, who's probably the most unique of all of them in his college role. And sometimes they're like Carson, and they're guys who are in the tight end room, but maybe are better running and change of direction athletes than your typical college tight end. And when you find guys like that, they make it easier for you to get condensed sets and create extra gaps. But then on the very next snap, get in spread formations and throw the ball vertically because of their talent in the pass game. And so they're the hardest people to find, but the easiest to plug and play all over the formation. And that's why we, Coach Durace and all of us staff, invest so much time scouring the country for these guys. But to be clear, there are many types of players that can have success in our offense, you know, whether it be a Jake Bermelin, a really good slot receiver whose change of direction is unbelievable, or a Colin Edie, who is one of the best running backs in FCS football. We will cater to the strengths of our guys, but those guys are very fun to coach. And you always come from a perspective of where you're at. And as a tight end coach, when you spend so much time coaching big skill athletes, it also gets your gears turning about how those guys can be used to help you out schematically.
We could probably do an entire podcast on that topic. Mike, great catching up with you. Stay healthy, stay safe. Enjoy the weekends off as much as you can. I know you'd rather be out there, and can't wait to see your offense out there once Princeton finally does take the field.
Thanks, Cody. We can't wait to be back, and thanks for everything you do to cover us. We really appreciate it.
You've been listening to the First in Football podcast, an inside look at Princeton Tigers football, and is a production of Learfield, IMG College.